This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. Now, if you have joined us for the very first time, welcome. Thank you for becoming an Equity Mate. If you are still getting up to speed with the basics, go and check out our Get Started Investing podcast. But without further ado, my name is Bryce. And as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you?
I'm very good, Bryce. Excited for this episode. This is an interview we pre-recorded back at the end of last year. And God, we were excited at the time.
One of our non-financial heroes, but a hero nonetheless. And it's actually come out at a pretty good time because the AFL season is now in full swing.
Some may say we planned it. Some may.
I would like to think that we have that foresight. But yes, we sat down. We had the pleasure of sitting down at an event in Melbourne last year hosted by Owen Raskovich and Rask Australia. We sat down with Lee Matthews, AFL legend Lee Matthews, to discuss...
Premiership winning player and coach Lee Matthews.
Yeah. To discuss money and leadership and how we can take some of the major lessons that Lee learned through his time coaching and playing AFL and developing players and building leadership styles and philosophies and how we can take that and approach it to our own money journey. So it was a fascinating interview. Some really, really good actionable insights came from this from my point of view. Would love to hear your feedback and please do leave us a 5-star review on Spotify and Apple as well. So Ren, without further ado, here is our interview with the one and only Lee Matthews.
All right. Well, hello everyone and happy Party Shirt Fridays. We're really excited for this one. My name is Bryce. For those that haven't come across us before, I am the co-founder of Equity Mates Media. And just like many other podcasters in this room, our mission is to make investing accessible for young Australians. And this is my co-host and co-founder as well, Renners. How are you going, Ren?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited to be here for this live event. We had to wear party shirts. Owen is trying to make party shirts a thing in finance. And in honour of him, we had to wear two of his party shirts today. But shout out to Owen for organising this, the whole Rask Australia team for putting it on.
Yes. Woo. But look, we are incredibly excited because we have none other than AFL legend, Lee Matthews. Lee, welcome.
Good evening, Bryce and Alex. Sorry to dull down the night with my attire, but anyway, we'll have a bit of fun for half an hour talking about our footy. What about that girl in the hall? Knew where the MCG was?
I know. What's Jeez. You wouldn't believe
so
it.
So after this, Lee will be walking to the MCG. Anyone who wants to know where the MCG is, follow him.
So we're going to spend the next 20 minutes or so unpacking Lee's experience with leadership and motivation, discipline, and then there will be some opportunity for questions at the end. It's not often you get a chance to speak with Lee, so we'll make sure we leave time for that. But we must start with AFL and get that out of the road before we talk about the serious stuff, right?
Okay.
AFL is the serious stuff.
That's fair call, fair call. So we're going to do a quick fire. Four quick questions, Lee. First one is flag for 2023. What's the pick?
Well, you start with the easy questions.
Yes.
Okay, Geelong finished the best team, so status quo, they might win it again.
Nice.
Okay, some Geelong fans in the audience. What about Wooden Spoon?
Well, North Melbourne, they were on the bottom at the end. I mean, the thing you should know is what happened last year is not going to happen next year, to be honest, but let's say North Melbourne will finish bottom again.
Okay. Jeez.
Pretty conservative, aren't I, in my investing and my theorising?
Not a risk taker, that's for sure.
An important reminder that past performance is not an indication of future performance.
All right, so rumours of a new team coming in. Tassie, should we have a Tassie team?
Well, Tasmania's been a state that's been into AFL. That seems to be the main reason why Tassie should have a team. It's hard to answer it quickly. You hope if it comes in, it's the only team, really, sports team in Australia that I'm aware of that the state government, the Tasmanian government, are putting in $12 million per year for 12 years to help get the funding of the club and maybe provide a better stadium for them to play out of. So it's a very different situation. But for me, I don't think we need a 19th team in the competition. I think 18's plenty. Secondly, I hope if Tasmania does come in, which I think they will, that they're not one of the half the team that needs additional help from the AFL to stay viable. So we hope. We'll see what happens, but I think they'll come in.
Nice. Well, somehow I've managed to get the microphone caught. Well, Lee, last quickfire question. I'm a Swans fan. Bryce is a Bombers fan. Oh, so yeah. Self-indulgently, who's going to finish higher, Swans or Bombers?
I'm a fan of Brad Scott.
Yes.
But I have to go for the Swans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, come on.
Now, Lee, every interview we start with our experts, we ask them the story of their first investment. So we thought we'd start there. Your experiences in footy and AFL, but if you can shed some light on that moment in time where you deployed some capital in some form, what was it? What was the story?
Oh, it'd be the first house. Way back for me in the early 70s in Dingley, bought a block of land and built a house. So that would have been the first financial investment. Was all of about $5,000 back then, so things change over time.
No one ask how much it's worth today. No one ask, all right? All right, well, Lee, from that moment to today, how do you think about investing now? Do you have an investing philosophy?
Well, I'm 70 years of age. I'm getting towards the end of my work life. I still do a bit of media, so I still got a paid job. But capital preservation is my first priority at this part of my life. I'm a fairly logical person. Got no much vision. I'm a poor investor because I can't really visualise the future. So I tend to use people who have got that, find a financial advisor, for instance. But capital preservation, I think, at this part of my existence, probably is the main thing.
Now, Lee, Owen said he'd buy us a beer if we could get a stock tip off you. And Bryce and I were putting our heads together and thinking, how could we subtly weave into the conversation something that would lead to a stock tip?
Yeah.
But we're nothing but not subtle.
Yeah.
Have you seen the shirts we're wearing?
Yeah,
so we're just going to ask you, you got a stock
got
tip
a spare?
For us?
Owen, you got a spare?
But a sector.
Okay.
Logic tells me that we know that there's this hope that renewables are going to power the world over this next generation. Maybe they will, but it might be that you need something else. And maybe for all its potential downsides, that nuclear might well be the base load alternative. It seems logical to me to be think about. I mean, anyway, that's so maybe something in the uranium or the energy or the nuclear energy sector might be my punt.
Nice. Good punt. All right. So, Lee, as investors, one thing that we like to focus on is management and leadership qualities of the companies that we're investing in. Get an understanding of how they're thinking about the future, how they're thinking about taking risk, investing capital, those sorts of things. You've spent a lot of time in high-performance culture and developing leaders through teams and developing your own leadership philosophy as well. What are some of the key characteristics of good leaders that you've seen come through players that you've coached, and also what are some of the characteristics that you personally hold for your own leadership philosophy?
Well, they have to be good salespeople, really, because doesn't matter whether you're a manager or a coach, doesn't matter what your title is, you're selling to your group your philosophies in a way. This is what we want you to do for us to be successful. The other part of that philosophy is individuals don't sacrifice for groups, but we talk investment, I guess, in terms of financial, but in the little world that I've been involved in most of my life, the AFL world, each individual player wants to be really successful deep down in his soul. He probably wants to be best on ground more than his team winning, deep down. But you learn that investing in the team cause and making the team better, you get your rewards. Like in our sport, you come off the ground, you feel good about yourself, you sing the song in the rooms, you have an emotional upper that really doesn't exist anywhere else in the world that I've been involved in. It might only last for a few minutes or half an hour or something. So that investment in the team, but it has to be win-win. So the manager coach has to convince individuals you'll be better if we do ABC, and the role-playing mantra that we need you to do to make your role within the team its most valuable, well, you've got to sell it. You've got to convince them and then acknowledge their work in the at the end of the process, which is probably in the footy world every Monday.
You should see the emotional upper we get when our portfolios turn green. It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Who would be some of the best leaders in that you had in your time from a football point of view?
Well, I look way back when I first started. I went to Hawthorn as a 17-year-old, so you're a young man. And when you're young, you are kind of there to be moulded, I guess, by what you see. And we had our kids back in the part-time area. Our coach was a guy by the name of John Kennedy. He was a school principal by profession, and he's working as a school principal and as a coach 50-odd years ago. But the basic principle that has stayed with me kind of ever since was that convincing of us that we have to be subservient to the team. Doesn't matter how egotistical you are and how driven you are, and no one was more driven and egotistical than me, I can tell you. But John Kennedy convinced us, now the way is, this is a group thing, and life's a group thing, as much as we might want to be individually successful. He taught us that was right. So some basic principles that were really footy ones, like injuries above the neck don't matter. In the modern concussion era, I don't know where that one sits. He also, in terms of the physical contact nature of the sport, don't show them you're hurt. I got knocked out twice, but I've never had my back on a stretcher. I got up, even though I was unconscious. Jeez. Because John Kennedy convinced me he's a bloody good salesman. That's what I'm telling you. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, I'm glad I'm not a professional footy player.
Yeah, that's changed a little bit in the modern era, but it's still pretty physical out in the middle.
So, Lee, one thing that you had to do as a coach, and especially a multiple premiership winning coach, yep, is take a group of young people and, you know, mould them into a team and develop them as individuals. You're speaking to a room full of relatively young people here. Glenn and my hairline beg to differ, but what some of the things that you really tried to instill in the young people when you were coaching and that we should all take... You know, we're not in high-performance sports teams, but we're all trying to be high-performance investors.
Well, my last coaching stint was at the Brisbane Lions from 1999 to 2008, and that's when football became a little bit more like normal world life in a way, where you become a full-time footballer. So you're not just going like the suburban players going to training and then playing on the weekends. It was now a job. So So this last couple of generations. So that was a really interesting... It's different when the players are pretty much available all the time to you. I mean, it might not be as much of a 9-to-5, and therefore it's not only their sort of passion and their hobby, it's also their livelihood, and that adds a lot more pressure really from what it was in the days when it was more just a part-time footy. So actually, therefore, being aware of that and being aware of the emotional cycle, I always thought that the physical contact sports, a combination of the physical, what your body can do, your mental, your knowledge, but your emotional state is what fluctuates all the time. And trying to know yourself, we had a sports psychologist who I wish I knew of this man when I played in a couple of my years. But how knowing yourself and those around you is a really good basis for working well as a group. And everyone's different. And it doesn't mean that different personalities are better or worse, but they are different. Like, for instance, there's a personality that this sports psychologist referred to as the enforcer personality. So in the pre-game, I'd be like one of them. You like going to war. Yeah, you're in the dressing room, you put a towel over my head and away. It's like I'm about to go to war. But there's a mozzie, another personality. There's four that we're all a bit of, but this mozzie, they like to muck around and play jokes. And the enforcers and the mozzies think the mozzies aren't really fair dinkum. They're not really trying because they're having fun. But we learnt that works. That works for them. So leave the mozzies alone. Let them hang around together. You enforcers, you can go in the corner and do your thing, and we leave each other alone. So that's just an example of knowing yourself and your tendencies and also those around you. But what I did like about this particular psychologist, Phil Jaunch, used to say, but bottom line, we don't really care what you think. We only care what you can do. See, people think thinking matters. Actions are the only thing that matters. That's the only thing that ever counts. It's the only thing that can ever be recorded. So that ability to control your sort of emotional states, know when I'm getting worked up, have the flag stop, being able to sort of calm yourself down. That was something that was the basis of the Lions team, which had a really successful period. And a lot of it, and we did it with wives, partners, staff. It's not only the players, it's everybody that has a little bit better knowledge of, again, of what your tendencies are yourself and what other people's are, and working within that with each other.
Yeah, some great sort of crossover there with understanding who you are as an investor and managing your own money and where you sit. And, you know, controlling emotion, those sorts of things when markets are tanking, and who you are and how you act, understanding that is super important. For those that are sitting here and looking to find a bit of an edge in their investing or in managing their own money, really interested to know how you tried to find an edge. You won 3 premierships in a row with the Brisbane Lions. What did you put in place that wasn't the Essendon approach of the early, whatever, like 2010s? But what did you put in place, or what were some of the things you tried to find a competitive edge?
Oh, well, it's a principle as much as anything. But you've got to try and find the competitive edge. That's the point. You are searching for the competitive edge. It's a non-profit sport in a sense. Everyone gets paid, and like a top-level AFL player now might get $1 million. A top-level coach might get $1 million. But it is actually no one profits from the club. So all the monies that the club can generate through supporters and TV rights and all that goes back into preparing the player. So back in that era, in terms of finding the competitive edge, I think the most radical thing that we did, we played a game in Cairns, pre-season game in February. Everyone sweats a lot. You dehydrate. You can't possibly drink enough in to actually, for the amount of that you're sweating it in that really humid environment. Our doctors and our conditioning staff said, let's give them an IV drip, those who've really lost the 4 or 5K. So they put the saline solution in direct to their vein, and it seemed to work quite well. So for the next few years, I'd be talking to the players at half-time, and like a bloody doctor's surgery, there'd be an IV drip hanging from the wall into the players' arms. They do it at half-time and post-game. After a few years, it was legal. It was only saline solution. But, yeah. I mean, I got to say, I could understand when the AFL sort of found out about it, they thought, this is not a good look for the local under-15 team. I could understand that. So they banned it, and they banned it 2 weeks before we were to play the grand final in 2001. So, okay, what did our conditioning staff do? They got a refrigerated van in underneath at the MCG outside our room. So at half time, you can't put the IV drip in. Go and put the players in the really cold atmosphere for 10 or 15 minutes to help them not sweat quite so much. Just an example. Every little bit helps. Mm. Now, that did help. We found a pilot, a Qantas pilot, who was prepared. We had a theory, or our conditioning people had a theory, that if you fly at a lower altitude, the air pressure's different. It might have different effects on your physiological state, particularly post-game when you're coming back, flying back from a game. So we found this guy, Don Lehman was his name, a Qantas pilot. He would fly the plane, it was safe, obviously, at about 15,000 feet. Just felt like you're about to land any time. And we did that for 2 or 3 years too. And that's like your placebo thing. I don't know whether it helped or not. But it helped our players, because I always said, as a club, if you can believe that our organisation is the top of its field, forget about other fields, but in the AFL, say there's 18 clubs, if our club and our system and our people and our conditioning is cutting edge, and they believe it, which our players did, even if it's a placebo effect, it's valuable.
Love that.
I just can't wait for a number of AFL coaches to start implementing placebos next year.
Low fly zones.
I want to go back to the idea of, you know, people think it's that people don't care about what you think; it's your actions that matter.
Yeah.
And you know that holds very true in investing, and especially in a year like this, everyone's had plenty of thoughts as their portfolio falls, but it's the actions that you take that matter. Not selling, sticking in for the long term, taking the opportunity to take advantage of the current prices. But a key part of that is managing emotion, because as an investor, it's very easy to get swept up in the emotion and panic and sell, or, you know, on the other side, get swept up when things are good and get FOMO and, you know, overextend yourself or whatever. So how have you seen the players that you've coached, and when you're a player, what's some of the best techniques you've seen to manage those emotions and really stay in control?
Well, it's something that probably every team does, and it's done more and more as time's gone in a more complex manner. And it's a simple principle in concept. I mean, we know what our objective is. I mean, when you go and play a game of football, there's a scoreboard there. So whoever kicks the most score wins. That's our objective. So you've got to know what your objective will start, don't you? But it's clear in the footy world. And you plan and prepare to do your best you can in the game. You play the game, you have an emotional response. If you win a close game, it might be just euphoria. If you lose a close game, it's bloody depressing. You feel like your world's about to end. But either way, about a day later, you come out of that emotional state because you start planning ahead. And the first start of planning ahead is to look back and review. Okay, and I used to always make sure it was a day or two after the game, so the emotional state had flattened out. Now we can rationally look back what happened, what worked for us, what didn't work for us, and then, guess what, we start that process again, the planning, preparation for the next weekend. So it's a simple principle when you think of it, but in a group situation, I mean, if a group can't spend half an hour together talking about what's happened the previous week, we're kind of kidding ourselves, aren't we? Mm. But how many groups don't? I'd say a lot. Mm.
Well, Lee, we could sit here all night and chat footy and all other things, but we should open it up to the audience. We've got about 8 minutes or so before Lee needs to jet off. So, I mean, now's the chance to speak to AFL legend in the house. So I don't know how we're going to facilitate this, Owen, but...
Well, Owen's there.
Great, with a mic.
Stick your hand up. Oh, and Manik Sarah's, I'll stick your hand up if you've got a question. While we're looking for a question, I've got one more thing to ask you, Lee. We've had a few AFL players or ex-AFL players on the show. Some of them are great investors. In your time, and we hear that there's a lot of stock chat and these days crypto and NFT chat in locker rooms. Who's the best investor you've come across in a locker room in your time?
Well, I should be thinking, who's become the wealthiest wealthiest post-player? Probably Craig Kelly. Who I coached at Collingwood, and he was a South Australian. It took him about 3 years to convince him to come to Melbourne, but then he started up one of the player management groups in the mid 90s, and that became TLA, which is a very big organisation. He sold it a couple of times for $20 million and bought it back for about $5 million. So he's sort of done that about twice. He's got to be the man, I reckon.
Nice.
He's
got to
be the
man.
He's actually, it's worked well for Craig. They say he's about to become CEO of Collingwood. I don't know if he could afford to do that.
Wow.
He's that wealthy.
I won't ask you who the worst is. Let's
come on.
Me. I'm going me.
Okay.
Not a good investor. Can't think forward. No. I live in the moment, unfortunately. I haven't got no vision. I'd like to have some vision. I'm going to have to use people like you. I'll be on your podcast next week to see what you're saying, bet stuff.
Sounds good. Well, make sure you're subscribing to Equity Mates you can hear Lee come on the podcast. But Owen, Monique, do we have someone in the audience?
Hi.
Hello.
First comment, you were my favourite player as a kid.
Oh, thank you. You must be very old, but anyway, thank you.
I had the number 3 on the back and everything.
Ah, fantastic. Thank you.
Quick question. There are two parts. So when you get your money, how do you decide how to allocate it? And do you yourself have a financial coach?
Well, I've got a financial advisor. Yeah, I employ a financial advisor to look after the part of my super fund. I'm old enough to have the... At least I made some good decisions, really. For people of our age, if whatever wealth you've got, you want to be in your super fund, don't you? Because it's had certainly had its tax advantages over the years. You still got to decide what to do with the money in the super fund. So I've got a financial advisor who looks after part of that. I'm a bit of a control freak, so he only looks after about a third of the pot, and I look after the other two thirds of the pot. Yeah. But I'm a very conservative investor, very conservative.
I think there's one here in the middle, Owen.
Lee, just keen to understand how you get your head out of a dark cloud and how do you sort of control your emotion, because some see through your coaching period at Brisbane was something that we know how you somewhat control your temper, and we've sort of seen you sort of lose your control at some point, but yeah, at the same time, which, don't get me wrong, it was very entertaining for all of us here, but at the same time, when you do speak, we do see the players, we do see the staff really listen to you, and sometimes the way that you sort of control your tone and your voice and that moment, keen to really just understand it from in a bit more detail from your perspective.
Now, what you say is very important. I mean, I try very hard when I coach not to be a stress carrier, because just the competition's a stress. The fact the opposition are trying just as hard to win as you are. There's stress. How am I going to perform? How are we going to perform? So you don't want the coach. You want the coach trying to assist them. So, for instance, I had a reasonable ability to have a cold exterior and my guts would be churning, but didn't necessarily look that way. But one of the things I did, in about the hour before the game, because I could feel myself getting uptight, particularly as a coach, sometimes I'd even dry reach and stuff. I mean, I just, because I was about to lose control once they ran out onto the field. So I wouldn't go near the players for about the last hour before the game because I didn't want my stress to rub off on them. But the other part of that stress is the thing I meant before. I lived that cycle for 37 years of actually you perform and you have an emotional response and it might be good or it might fade. But if I lost, the family, you know, just don't talk to me for a day. But a day later, you come out of the fog because you start planning ahead. And that's kind of... So all of a sudden, okay, you've had a really bad experience, but you've got a chance again to do something sort of good in the next phase. That's the great thing about the week-to-week cycle of sport when you think of it. But, yeah, no, but I'm trying hard to not let your emotions be reflected in your actions or your manners or your appearance. I wasn't too bad at that, which is a pretty important... pretty important quality, I think, particularly in modern footy when the coach has got a camera on them almost as much as the players have when the game is on. Yeah, I mean, talking about in the 2.5 hours of the game.
I think we got another question up the front.
I might just jump in and we'll come to you next. I've got a question from the live stream, which is from Morgan, who says, how have you managed someone that became fixated on a certain path or strategy and refused to be open to other options?
Well, you do your best to meld that in. So it depends. Let's face it. If he's a very, very, very good player and it helps us win games of footy, you do put up with a lot. Because what are we there for? We're there to win games of footy. So if he's a good player, he's got to be doing a lot of things wrong not to be valuable. But if you can't, the high-performing individual in the team sport is you often get asked about that. And you try to just make sure that it's melded in so that it's a net positive, that the net positive, they were positive to the team performance. If it comes to the stage they're not, then they have to leave the team. That's the bottom, that's the end result. But that means maybe you've failed as a manager, but sometimes we all have failures in that regard because sometimes over time individuals just they'll become net negatives to the group. But that's one of the things that managers and coaches have to decide.
Okay, I think we had one more down the front here. I'll just come around.
Just want to say, Lee, that I've always been a big fan, and you crushed my childhood dream of Richmond getting into a grand final in 2001. Back in the
spring. Yeah. Yes, that's right. Yes, we did. Yeah.
But thankfully, we've had good times the last few years. You talk of being a salesperson and trying to emulate that in the AFL. How did you get your team to 3 grand finals and sell them that each year?
Well, I think there was a couple of things that our team, it's interesting when your team looks back and they talk about it now, almost a couple of decades later. One, they lived in the moment. Like basically, you've got to know when to focus and when to relax. You know, when to train, again, when to relax. So you've got to be able to have that ability to concentrate on the now. Mostly life's about what's going to happen the next hour. Okay, once we've done that the best we can, then we'll get into the hour after that. So living in the moment was really important. And they embraced the concept, the role-playing contract, that investing in the team by embracing our role. Now, that's where the selling part was, that I had to convince them that the role we're asking you to play, everyone in football, 95%, they all do the same thing. But there's a part of the game that we want you to do this, the A, Alistair Lynch was a big forward. We want, if we're in trouble, kick the ball in his head 10, 15 metres out from our goal. Big, strong man, you know, he'll mark it up, come to go. Craig McRae, who now coaches Collingwood, his job, if the ball comes off his hands, you've got to be there to give ground-level support. Like, just some basic things like that. But our players started to... We lost a game by 15 goals in early 2001. The following week, we lost by 5 points. The following week, we played Essendon, who hadn't lost for about 2 years. We beat them 120 straight after losing by 15 goals 2 weeks before. So, one, you never know what's going to happen. But our players look back on what we identified from that Carlton game. Was Carlton's performance was based on three or four players that you wouldn't even know of unless you're Collingwood supporters. Anthony Franchina, Darren Hume, Glenn Freeborn, who were the role players, the chasers, the tacklers, the pressures that allowed the good players to be good players. And our players embraced that. Brad Scott, Marcus Ashcroft, Craig McRae, you know, played different players. And that was what our team believes was the principle, the couple of principles on which they based their performance. And from that, partly from that, they'd have the talent, of course, a very talented group. But that was kind of the psychological belief systems, as simple as it sounds, that was the base of the performances of the team that played in the four consecutive grand finals in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we've got time maybe for one more down the back, yeah.
Hi Lee, I just wanted to talk to you about what you did with young people and dealing with the amount of money professional sports people actually got. So how did you deal with that 18-year-old kid drafted back in 2000, they were getting $250,000. What was the club doing? What was the way that you were dealing with the financial windfall that your players had? But also then the other side of that question is, once they left the AFL, and that windfall fell away very quickly. How were you dealing with that emotion, with that sort of physical change that they were experiencing from the money they were accepting?
Yeah. And did you record that? And the evolution of that, when you think of it, where the players that have been the full-timers, which is the last 20-odd years, so they've been the full-timers, but every player has got a player-manager, and the player-manager gets 3% of his income to manage him. So that manager, if he's doing his job, he should be the one who is largely providing or getting the financial advice for that particular player. The clubs themselves will have a welfare manager that is there for anything that the player needs some help or advice with. And you might well come to a club do you know a financial advisor that you could recommend, for instance? But I think most clubs and most people with clubs would be very loathe to have too much, apart from recommendations, not to be too closely involved in what the players did with their money. They might give them the advice, but it's a dicey area if they got to sort of almost embrace the advice. Now, post-playing, clubs will try to still be there for play. The Players Association, the AFL Players Association, has a past players alumni for the players might, for instance, have bad injury issues that from their playing, might need surgery. So the Players Association will pay for the cost of the surgery. But I would have thought the clubs, most clubs would say that actually being too closely involved in the financial advice to an individual player, you know, is something his family, certainly his manager, should be the main source for stuff like that.
Mm. Well, Lee, we have unfortunately run out of time, but we'd just like to say a massive thank you for sharing your time with us tonight. Some great lessons coming out of the conversation, and I'm sure on behalf of everyone it's been an absolute pleasure hearing from you.
Much.
So thank you
Enjoy.
Very much.
You have been listening to an Equity Mates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. Equity Mates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.